Hey, everybody. Welcome to Change Starts Here, the Research Conversations edition. I am Kim Yaris, and I am joined by my friend and colleague, Jennifer Chevalier. So we are so glad that you are joining us today because we are talking about a very important piece of systemic synergy, developing staff efficacy. So when we use this term, what is it that we are referring to? So we think about it as the collective belief of the entire school staff in their ability to make a meaningful impact on student success. So it's the idea that when teachers, administrators, and support staff all come together and trust in one another's abilities and expertise, they can create real change, no matter how big the challenges are. Just going to pause there. Is there anything you would add to that definition, Jennifer?
Just what spoke to me is real change. I think that's something that we're all grasping for in education. We're changing all kinds of things, but it's not sustaining and improving outcomes. So I just love where you're headed with this.
Yeah. So like when I'm thinking about staff efficacy, it's kind of like I see it as, you know, a powerhouse sports team, right? Every person on the team plays a really critical role. And together, as everybody's playing that role, it builds the collective confidence and capacity for students to be able to rise and be the best that they can be, which is why we are educators, right?
Absolutely.
Okay. So, and I think that's kind of like the power of staff efficacy. It's shared confidence. When we truly believe in our potential that we are a team and that we foster a school environment where everyone, students and adults, then we all thrive, right? So can you think of developing efficacy either in yourself or others? Can you think about how that has shaped your career, Jennifer?
What comes to mind first is this amazing experience I had when I was in the role of an instructional coach. I was considered content agnostic because I'm not knowledgeable in every content area.
Nobody is.
But I was an instructional expert. I knew really effective instructional strategies. And one year I had the opportunity to support a civics teacher who was in her second year of teaching. And when I first met with her, I found she knew the civics content really well. I would even go as far to say that she was an expert in the content because she had worked formerly as an attorney before coming into the teaching profession. So her knowledge was incredible. But effective teaching strategies were not something that she developed when she was becoming an attorney, right? We all understand that. So she and I were completely dependent upon each other because I'm as far from being an expert in civics as one could possibly be. And so after I assessed her knowledge, I just looked at her and said, you know what? When we meet, if you show up with all of your content knowledge, and I show up with all of my instructional strategies, we're going to see huge gains. And I didn't really realize the power that that statement had, but it was absolutely true. We wove together our two areas of expertise throughout the school year, and we saw a 17% increase in the end of course exam scores that year.
Wow. That is like super palpable. Like, as you're telling that story, I could just feel what it would have been like working together, right? So, and I think that that is the very heart and definition of both synergy and efficacy, right? Mm-hmm. When you were telling your story, it reminded me back to my, you know, the early days of my career. I remember that I had had this really specific training in writer's workshop. And at the time, it was kind of new to everybody. And I was implementing it in my classroom because I had just come out of this really great training program. And everybody was so curious about it. And I think that that's part kind of like the, you know, like a real catalyst to efficacy is curiosity. But everybody was so curious and they wanted to know what I was doing. And so one day we just gathered in my friend's kitchen. We put together big long tables and I was this really young teacher, but I was teaching my colleagues about what I knew about this, you know, really hands-on approach to getting kids really excited about and improving their writing skills. And, you know, they were curious and leaning in. And, you know, I don't have a statistic about how much we improve students' writing ability. I wish we did. But, you know, it was just a very organic moment back then about how we were like synergizing and working together so that we could raise the bar on what we could provide for students.
That's a great example. So why don't we just reflect on, you know, why does staff efficacy matter? And I'll start with a narrow view and then we'll kind of broaden out. But I'll be rattling off a bunch of citations, different authors from different studies, and you can find all that information in the show notes. So just check there if you want to know more. So when we look at Bandura's work around the self-efficacy theory, the focus is really on past personal experience. Have I been able to make a difference in student learning in the past? And then when we look at Hoy's work, we see that even new teachers who lack teaching experience can have efficacy. And so how does that work? Well, it can be developed in a couple of different ways, through mastery experiences when they were student teaching or during induction. You know, they develop that mentality, well, I've done it before, so I can do it again. Or vicariously through others, if you observe another teacher's success using an effective instruction practice, it increases our confidence that the new teacher could be successful too, right? So it's the, if you can do it, I can do it kind of confidence that gets developed there. And then there's social persuasion. How are teachers socialized? What are the paradigms that they are learning and absorbing when they're pre-service teachers? And so, like, are we instilling in them high expectations for every student or high expectations for each teacher? Is there a belief in collective efficacy and a focus on collaboration as the way to be successful? So that's the more narrow viewpoint. So let's zoom out a little more to a broader view of the power of teacher efficacy. A recent study by Lee found that teacher self-efficacy actually builds resilience in teachers. And this is important because while teaching is extremely rewarding, it is also very challenging. So teachers who develop strong efficacy are more able to thrive in the face of challenges. And so who benefits from that? Well, everybody, teachers, students, schools. So teachers who are more efficacious and are more resilient are and they're also less likely to burn out, right? So the teacher retention is higher for teachers who have high self-efficacy. And also teachers who are efficacious have that confidence in their ability to promote student learning. And there are really two layers of teacher efficacy here. There's that general teaching efficacy, like I believe in general that the power of teaching can impact every student and improve outcomes. And then there's that more personal level, like I believe I can help every student learn and grow. So when we really stop and think about it, Kim, ultimately school culture and climate are also impacted by teacher efficacy.
You know, I just need to take a moment to unpack some of that stuff that you just talked about. Right. So I'm just imagining being a school leader, listening to what some of the what you just said. And I know that one of the big issues on their minds right now is teacher retention. Right. And so, you know, focusing on teacher efficacy or staff efficacy is kind of like a backdoor route to taking this problem on. You know, it's like, how effective do they feel within this work that they are doing? And so, you know, you just really had me thinking about how that could be a potential solution. But of course, there are barriers to developing efficacy always, right? So you've got me thinking back to when I was a staff developer, which I did for a long, long time. And my job was overseeing the implementation of a lot of new literacy initiatives in school. And so by the very nature of these initiatives being quote unquote new, it would always often create dissonance amongst students, teachers, and stir up those feelings of, why do we need to do this? Or, okay, if I wait this out, this too shall pass. Mm-hmm. If I were to give this response a word, I might call it resistance. And I think resistance is one of those words that's in direct contrast to another word I heard you say, which is resilience. So the thing I think about resistance is that when it shows up, it's not always resistance, but sometimes it is. But more often than not, I found that resistance was fear. Right? So underlying it was this fear. What if I fail? What if I'm not able to do this well enough? What if I can't learn this new initiative? And that dissonance or fear of change is probably one of the most common barriers to developing staff efficacy. And in my experience, the antidote to that barrier, you know, more times than not, was leadership. You know, how well were teachers supported in navigating the change that was being presented to them? And that basically was making all of the difference about whether they felt efficacious and continued to develop, or whether it kind of just stopped in its track and completely stalled.
Oh, interesting. You're making me think, I've definitely heard some of those things like this too shall pass and those types of statements and seen and experienced from my own teaching career that sometimes, you know, change can be unsettling. Mm-hmm. And something that comes to mind is a district I worked in, they launched this new online software program that we were all supposed to use to help students with math and ELA instruction. And there was just a lack of training and tools provided to implement the new program. And so what happened was before, like 2 days before school started, I'm getting the classroom ready and getting organized. And this cart filled with these boxes shows up and they're dumped inside my classroom, and I open them up and it's workbooks, like thick workbooks, mm-hmm. one for math, one for ELA. And then there were just tons of them. And in my experience, workbooks are not necessarily a best practice instructional strategy. So I was like, okay. But then as I looked at the workbook, I saw the name of the computer software program that we were going to be implementing. So I'm like, oh, okay, it's a computer thing, but there's a workbook thing. But I wasn't really sure what to do with the workbooks. And I opened them up and they're not like an independent practice workbook. They were more of like, almost look like a guided type of instruction. But you know, I'm wondering if I've looked at the online program and it gives the instruction. So I don't really see the purpose of these workbooks. And I'm not a believer in workbooks. So what did I do, Kim? I took the boxes of workbooks and shoved them in the closet, shut the door and never touched them that year. But what I did do is I did rotate the students on the computer to interact with this program. Each student got on, you know, at least once a week. I only had three computers in the classroom that mm-hmm. year because the principal was reporting usage data, you know, which teachers are using the program, da, da, da. So you were kind of called to task if you weren't using it. So I made sure my students got on there. But, you know, I just was more aware of kind of hands-on different ways of learning that I thought were more effective. So I didn't really invest myself in this program too much. And apparently I was not alone because within a couple of years, the district decided the program didn't work and stopped purchasing it. But later on in my career, I learned that that program is highly evidence-based and makes huge learning gains in math and ELA for students like in all demographic categories. And I was like, oh my gosh, what a missed opportunity. The reason it didn't work is because we weren't using it properly, right? We weren't using it with fidelity because we didn't understand why we had it, its impact that it could have on our students. And so it was just like a failure to launch from the start.
Yeah. So I feel like there's so many themes in what we're talking about right here of things that can undermine efficacy, you know, so lack of trust and collaboration, you know, it can be overwhelming workload, you know, the time that it takes to learn that new thing that we're asking people to take, that insufficient professional development, resistance to change, the school culture, all of these things can impact efficacy. And listeners, we are going to, if you go to these, to our notes, we're going to have a tool for you to kind of reflect and evaluate, you know, what's working or not working for efficacy. So be sure to download that, check out those notes. So, you know, basically one of the things that I'm really thinking about as we're talking about this here is the role that leadership plays in developing staff efficacy. And it just feels like when different directives are coming from different leaders, people feel ineffective. So building staff efficacy starts with leadership because leadership are the people that help the staff navigate resistance to help build their confidence, to create the culture where they feel like they can make mistakes and that it's going to be okay.
So when I think about how leaders can help develop efficacy, I think there are like leadership behaviors that positively influence teacher efficacy. And so I'm going to cite research from several different articles. Again, check the show notes for the citations here. But so principals and other leaders at the district and school level can model efficacious behaviors. And what are those? Like risk-taking, curiosity, cooperation, exploration, kind of coming at everything from a, well, let's try this. And if this doesn't work, then we'll do this. Not if this doesn't work, then you did it wrong, right? It's that that behavior, exhibiting that as a leader even. Well, I'm going to try this thing and I want your feedback. If we model it from the top, then it makes everyone else feel comfortable taking those risks and being curious. Leaders can also inspire group purpose through a shared vision, creating a team identity, giving shared credit, being transparent with data and having a public scoreboard so we can see how we're doing, not to say, oh, well, you're not doing well enough, but to just learn from each other. Kim, if you are doing really well and my students' scores weren't the same, then, you know, it should be the kind of environment where I don't feel judged, but I feel empowered to come to you and be like, well, how did you teach this? Because I didn't get the same results, right? We want that kind of mentality, not like, oh no, look at my scores. Another thing that leaders can do, we can improve academic achievement by raising collective efficacy beliefs and pointing to past teacher experiences and successes. So we have people right in our own buildings that are being successful in different ways and highlighting those successes is a way to build that efficacy among everybody. We can promote mastery experiences through, I think sometimes our staff development is not as thoughtfully designed as it could be, but if we were really intentional in how we designed it, those can create those mastery experiences to help build efficacy. And then we can also promote action research, right? Which again, takes more of that exploratory approach to teaching where we're all growing and trying and learning together. We can also provide support structures to nurture the development of collective teacher efficacy. And I think that those really have to stem from the leader having high emotional intelligence and being highly relational. So that's something leaders can work on their own. If you wouldn't describe yourself that way. I know sometimes I have to like check myself because I'm not always the most highly emotionally intelligent, but those are things we can do personally.
And it's really important to note too that while great leadership is really important in developing staff efficacy, it does begin with the individual teacher too, right? Or it is a synergistic relationship, right? So there are things that teachers can do. They can collaborate with their peers. They can build their own professional learning communities, start a mentorship program, where they're helping each other, coaching each other, celebrating their successes, right? Those are the things that are within a teacher's circle of influence to build their own efficacy. So I think that's important too.
Awesome. Well, I thought that was a great discussion. I think we can all continue to work and grow in this area to help our mm-hmm. teachers build that efficacy. And then we know that builds their resilience and improves their retention. So it's a win all the way around. This is definitely an area where your time would be well spent pouring into this. So we just want to thank all of you for joining us today for this discussion. Make sure to like and subscribe to Change Starts Here when you, so that you're aware of when our next episode comes out. Take care.